Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Warrior Met, fighting for dignity 1 year later. The rally planned for next Wednesday. The contract workers wanted Kellogg's. Oh, it's a good one. And today on the show, it's the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades and our first Friday with Fred. Welcome to the Friday, April 1st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on a number of platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And remember, when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Dorsey Hager is going to be our first guest today. He is the executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, columbusconstruction.org. You can follow him on Twitter at BuildCentralOH, and that is so appropriate because there is so much building going on in Columbus and around Columbus. And today we're going to give you an update on the Intel plant that was announced some months ago, and apparently a number of people, politicians, people like Dorsey, went over to Phoenix and they checked out the Intel plant there. Can't wait to hear about this because I'm hearing this from various people in the trades. That plant is awesome. This one is going to be just like it, maybe even more. We're talking $20 million that Intel is going to invest in to build the plant. And then down the road, $100 million to develop partnerships with Ohio education associations. So we're talking about many, many jobs into the future. And you heard about the chip shortage? Well, this is going to help big time. And it's good to see that companies like Intel, who have shipped so many jobs overseas, have finally seen the light and they're building them in America. Gotta love that. This is a 1,000-acre site. We're talking 7,000 construction jobs. 7,000 construction jobs. And when they build it, about 3,000 people will be working in that facility. And that's just for starters. Just for starters. We're also going to get an update on Building Futures, and that's a great program, getting young people involved in the trades, and we're going to need them, especially in Central Ohio with that plant. And we'll talk about the politics in Central Ohio, the whole mess with redistricting. I'm sure he's going to touch on that as well. Fred Redman will be joining us later in the show. Fred is the Secretary Treasurer and Executive Vice President now of the AFL-CIO. He is officially retired from the steelworkers. Goes back to 1973 when he became a steelworker. But here's his updated bio. Fred was elected to Secretary Treasurer by the Executive Council last August, and he is the first African-American to hold that office in the history of the Labor Federation. He has spent his entire life fighting for racial justice in the workplace. In 2016, Fred was appointed to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's Advisory Commission on African-American Affairs. And 2 years ago, 2020, he was tapped to chair the AFL-CIO Task Force on Racial Justice, a body focused on taking concrete action to address America's long history of racism and police violence against blacks. We're going to touch on, a couple of things. Number one, today is the first anniversary of the Warrior Met strike by coal miners in Alabama. And I've got a statement here from Cecil Roberts, head of the Mine Workers Union. I'll get to that in a minute. But this is something that should not have gone on this long. It's tragic. And then we're going to talk about Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. If you saw the grilling that she went through by various senators, who you know they weren't going to vote for her anyway. We'll talk about that process. And next week, it's my understanding that the Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on her, and then it goes to the full Senate. And this week, Susan Collins, who's one of the more progressive Republicans, announced that she is going to vote for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. So Fred's going to give us his perspective on what she had to go through. And keep in mind, this is the first African-American woman on the Supreme Court in the history of our country. That's pretty darn significant. And her credentials are absolutely amazing. So our first Friday with Fred, we started this, oh my God, months ago. And he's been so gracious to join us here to give us an update from the AFL-CIO and various unions, 50-plus unions that make up the AFL-CIO. All right, the coal miners commenting on today's one-year anniversary, the beginning of the strike at Warrior Met in Alabama. Cecil Roberts, who heads the Mine Workers Union, issued this following statement. As a result of some poor decisions by upper management to purchase unprofitable foreign coal operations and a weak market for metallurgical coal, Walter Energy filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This is back in 2015. American bankruptcy laws are written to allow companies to shed obligations to workers, to vendors, the government, and everyone else. The bankruptcy followed that pattern at first, and then it got worse. Private equity came into the picture, said Cecil. At the demand of Apollo, Blackstone, KKR, and others operating as coal acquisitions, Walter Energy filed motions to terminate the mine workers' collective bargaining agreement and asked that the mines be sold free and clear. The bankruptcy judge also terminated any obligation the company had to pay for retiree health care and pensions, putting retirees' lives at risk. The new company that emerged from the bankruptcy as Warrior Met Coal was not required to hire any of the current workforce. Apollo and its private equity partners finally did agree to bring the workforce back, but they forced the workers to accept a contract worse than any other union coal mine in the country. Cecil goes on to say the workers gave up more than $1.1 billion. $1 billion in order to pull the company out of debt. It was reasonable to assume that once the company became profitable, a fair and decent contract would be negotiated in 2021. But the corporate team Apollo left in place, the same team that drove the company into bankruptcy in the first place, appears to have no intention of doing that. Which brings us to today. Coal prices have skyrocketed. Coal companies across the nation are getting record prices for their coal. Yet Warrior Met has already lost more than $1 billion in potential coal sales over the last year. Why? Because it refused to settle the strike. The company brought in high-priced anti-labor law firms like Akin Gump. I like that name. Akin Gump to sit at the bargaining table instead of bringing back the skilled workforce that could increase sales by as much as $1 billion a year at current prices. Cecil goes on to say, this is what happens when Wall Street comes to town. I am so sick of dealing with out-of-state lawyers who could care less about Alabama families and Alabama values. These workers have lived the last 6 years with abusive management, working six, sometimes 7 days a week, and little or no time off. Management is setting up a company to fail. Alabama workers are not going to work long for a coal company that pays less, offers fewer benefits, less vacation time, and forces miners to work more hours than the mines right down the road. So, I ask, why would anyone want to work for Warrior Met? Since the beginning of the strike, safety violations have skyrocketed, turnover rates are increasing. They're spending money trying to recruit unskilled workers from West Virginia and Kentucky to work in these mines because no self-respecting Alabama miner would agree to work there. I've been at this a long time. I've negotiated contracts with just about every coal company that's been around in the last 30 years, including contracts with very difficult operators like Don Blankenship and Bob Murray. I remain prepared to do that at Warrior Met, but the company refuses to make any substantial changes to their offer, which was rejected 95% to 5%. In conclusion, Cecil Roberts says it's time for the company to put aside the New York lawyers whose job it is to avoid reaching an agreement. It's time for the people who matter to come to the table and sit down for as long as it takes to resolve this. Unbelievable this is going on this long. And a great point. Coal prices skyrocketing right now. I want to call attention to the mine workers website. And it's umwa.org. You'll see a video there by Cecil Roberts. And there's also a big rally planned for next Wednesday in McCalla, Alabama, to demand justice for the miners on strike for 1 year today. umwa.org is that website. Well, on Monday night, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, which is affiliated with the UFCW, and this would be Local 184-L, they ratified a new contract containing unprecedented wage increases for workers at Kellogg's in Kansas City, Kansas. Listen closely to this. The new agreement, which covers about 570 workers who produce Cheez-It brand snack crackers. God, I love those. The contract brings a 15.5% wage increase over the course of a 3-year contract with an additional $500 bonus for workers in the third year. How about that? 15.5% over 3 years. So that's over 5% a year. They would not accomplish that without a union like the retail workers. Got a comment here from Larry Smith, who's president of the Retail Workers Local 184-L. He said, these wage increases will help us better provide for our families and improve the quality of our lives. And it's not just our pay, but also improve benefits, protected health care with low premiums. And that's what we need. And that's what we deserve now. One more here. Last week, workers at Kalita Air ratified their first contract as members of the Transport Workers Union. The bargaining unit of flight dispatchers voted 80% in favor of their tentative agreement with the cargo air carrier. John Samuelson, who's the international president, congratulated his members on the new collective bargaining agreement and said, organizing drives are not complete until workers win the massively important first contract. A winning drive is nothing but an empty shell absent winning a first contract. Boy, he's right about that, huh? All right, quick break. When we come back, Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Central Ohio right now. And joining us on our live line, Mr. Dorsey Hager, who is Executive Director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You heard me a couple minutes ago talking about that Intel plant, and that is the big buzz in Central Ohio. We're talking a lot of construction jobs and a lot of jobs down the road, especially when they expand that plant. The plant's not even built yet, and they're talking about building it out. Dorsey Hager, how are we doing today, my brother?
I'm doing pretty fair. A little bit of an April Fool's Day joke. I woke up this morning to snow on the ground, so I don't know how I feel about that on the 1st of April, but happy April Fool's Day to all of us, I guess. I don't know if spring's coming, but I wish it would hurry up and get here. I'm about done with winter. So
I hear you, my friend. You know what? I got a picture on my cell phone. This was a couple of years ago. I have a pool in my backyard, and I open it up at the beginning of May, and on May 9th, I'm heating it, right? On May 9th, it's snowing. The whole backyard is full of snow. I'm scratching my head. Wait a minute. It's May 9th. This is not supposed to be happening. But, hey, you know what? I don't know if it's part of climate change or what, but that's what we have to deal with. But you've got some big news down there in Central Ohio. We've been talking about this Intel plant that's going to start. Maybe you can give us an update. Where are we right now? And I understand you were part of a group that went to Phoenix to check out their plant there. So the update first, Dorsey, go ahead.
Yeah, so it seems like where we're at right now in the schedule is we're working closely with One Columbus, who obviously put together the presentation, beat out a lot of cities and a lot of regions around the country to land this Intel plant here in New Albany, just northeast of Columbus. We're working with One Columbus to help gear up, to obviously get ready for when they start pushing dirt, when they break ground. Looks like 1st of July they're going to want to start moving some dirt around. Probably before the end of the year they're going to want to break ground. The talk right now is it's a 36-month schedule, so we're looking at about $20 billion worth of work in 36 months, and they would like to be producing chips in July. At the height, obviously, we're talking about 7,500 construction workers. In that, you know, probably 3,000 UA members, fitters, plumbers, probably about 1,800 electricians, 700 sheet metal workers, and, you know, the rest, cement, brick, insulators, laborers, obviously. A lot of the package work around the Intel plant, so the infrastructure work out there, is already starting to come out. So you're talking about the widening of lanes, the reinforcement of bridges. There's a proposed water treatment facility plant out there that's in the works, because you and I talked offline and we've talked a lot. These chip plants use about 5 million gallons of water a day. So they, you know, that was one of the selling points of this location for Intel, was the access to water. So we're going to have to, you know, have a wastewater treatment plant out there to help with the water and the cleaning of the water and stuff and recycling and all that. But that's pretty much where we're at. And the delegation, Kenny Ruggles from the UA, Derek Qualipi, Tim Ely and Rich Manlin and Mike Nisey from the State Building Trades, we all went out to Phoenix a few weeks ago and just basically wanted to, like, try to wrap our head around this. And we were able to go to the Intel site that's completed out in Chandler, Arizona, and they're also adding on to it, which was interesting. We were able to meet with the managers and agents from the UA local out there. Huge shout out to Aaron Butler. He was so hospitable. We got to spend 10 days with him, not only like how they handle calls for manpower, how they do recruitment, how they do outreach in the greater Phoenix area and across the state, but also some of the training and stuff that goes in, because this is highly, you know, specialized work. You know, we have refinery workers that travel all over the country and work in refineries. We have nuclear workers, you know, this chip stuff is a little bit different. There's several levels of specialized construction work and safety and things like that that go into it. So we were kind of learning about all those processes and stuff, which was really cool. We got to visit the IBW local out there in the training center, and that was really neat to see what they're doing to grow and expand. And just to kind of put it in perspective, and I don't have the exact numbers off my head, but before Intel came out there to Arizona, you know, the UA local was probably a 1,000-person local, which is pretty good size. Mm-hmm. Intel arrived, and their membership pretty much tripled overnight. Now, with the expansion of Intel and more work, they're looking at tripling again. So, you know, you're looking at probably a 6,000 to 8,000 man local in the next 36 months, and that's the economic impact that they have on the region. And, you know, I was kind of out with a few friends the other night, having a few drinks, and we were kind of making a few jokes and kind of making light and laughing of some of the news stories that have been on here in the local news. And, you know, they're talking to businesses out in Licking County, and, you know, there's a young lady who owns a flower shop, and she's like, I'm hoping to sell more flowers when they get here. And it's just, I don't think anybody has any real idea of what's coming. So one of my friends says, well, what's coming? You were out there. You've been talking to these people. You've been on the ground with this stuff, says Crystal. What's coming? And I said, I know what's coming, and I still can't put into words what's coming. He's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm going to give you a great analogy. I said, you have two daughters, right? 4 and 6. And I said, and they occupy 100% of your time 24/7. You're just overwhelmed with that, right? And he's like, absolutely. Yeah. And I said, imagine if I said today at noon, you and I are going to go and we're going to adopt 38 more daughters. That's what the impact is going to be. That's what the impact. And he just kind of looked at me, and I'm like, no one has any idea what's coming. And we just got to do the best we can. Like I said on your show, we've developed a workforce development committee of training directors, organizers, reps, obviously people from the state level, because this is going to be a project that's going to not only affect, you know, my area, but the state of Ohio and probably the entire region. So Kitty French is hands on the, you know, on the ground working hard with us. Of course, my communications and outreach director, Kelly Harrop, Mike Nisley from the state. And we're meeting as a workforce development committee, and we're setting up these huge outreach events and these large schools all over Columbus, Franklin County, and Central Ohio to basically, you know, like I've said, let every parent, let every counselor, let every teacher know that if you have someone graduating from high school that is not going to the military or college, and they want to have the potential to make six figures, then they need to call us, because we're going to find a job for them. We're going to train them, and we're going to get them in the path to the middle class, and we're going to find a job for them.
And they got to get on board now. I mean, this plant is, like you indicated, once they get the ground excavated, we're like 36 months out. So we're talking, what, 2025, maybe 2026 when this is happening.
I think July of 25, they want to start producing microchips. And you know, I met with a good friend of mine the other day who works for the District Council for the Laborers here, and he does a lot with contractor recruitment. He's doing a lot of that, and he does a lot with outreach, and he's very helpful with us in our apprenticeship readiness and stuff. And Mike Engberton and Sarah Geis in their office. And you know, it's like I said to them, I said, if you do not get 1 hour of work inside the plant from Intel, which we know that's not going to happen, the laborers are going to get a ton of work in there, I said, but if you don't get a single hour of work just from inside the plant, you're still going to be so busy with everything around it. And the other impact, too, that I don't think people realize, and I just had a meeting with a local economic development director last week, is the offshoots of this, the suppliers that are coming in. You know, when Honda came in here in the early 80s, there were suppliers as far away as Galleon, Mount Gilead, Mount Vernon, you know, 60 to 80 miles away. We're starting to see that here. You know, I'm getting outreach from counties west of Franklin County, which is away from New Albany, and they're getting, you know, hits and asked for proposals for suppliers. So the offshoot of all this and the work, like we said, that just the Intel itself over the next 17 years is probably going to be about $100 billion. But I think the total construction impact in the next 20 years is going to be closer to $300 billion.
Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. I want to go back to the UA, and you pointed out in Phoenix there was what, like 1,000 in that local, and then it tripled to 3,000, and that's tripling to 8,000 to 9,000. Are we going to see the same kind of increase in Central Ohio with the UA? Because you mentioned they need a lot of water, 5 million gallons of water a day, so that's definitely going to benefit the United Association. Similar kind of scenario then?
Yeah, I mean, I know Tim Ely and Mark Heimiller and the guys over at 189 are putting together their plans for outreach and recruitment. We're trying to help facilitate that on a council level as best we can. But I would certainly hope so. I would certainly hope so. I think that, you know, a job like this just offers so much opportunity, not only the direct jobs, but also what it does to your training center, to your market share, to everything. I mean, I know other locals around the country that have had microchip plants like this come in, or have had, you know, cracker facilities come in. You know, not only have they, you know, trained up people to work on those plants, but they've had their local grow and they've brought in resources and expanded their facility, so that way they can attack other areas of their work where maybe non-union has had maybe not a foothold, but maybe more of a presence than they should, like in the service sector or in the educational sector, building schools and stuff. So I don't see how it doesn't happen here in Columbus and Central Ohio. I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of our local unions as well. I'll give you another example, and he's a good friend of mine, Rory Haynes from the Cement Masons. I mean, you know, they have a pretty decent-sized local, but we're probably going to need 100 to 200 cement finishers out there at the height of that job just at Intel. You know, and Pat Gilsinger, mm-hmm. the CEO, said it at the announcement. If there's a truck in Central Ohio delivering concrete somewhere else besides Intel, he wants to know about it, because they're going to need every concrete truck that's available. And that's, you know, that goes back to, you know, I'm sure what Kelly talked about last month and what we've talked about. It's not just the building trades portion, which we're doing great work with building futures, and we're even looking at the expansion of building futures, but it's also driving futures. There's going to be a ton of, you know, jobs within these companies and within these other suppliers and the delivery supply chain that's going to create so much opportunity for the Teamsters too. We want to make sure that if there's a kid coming in or a kid hitting our website or one of our outreach events that definitely knows that he or she wants to have a good middle-class income, but maybe doesn't want to work outside, maybe doesn't want to work in the trades, maybe wants to get their CDL, we want to help them as well, because I think we can find an opportunity for them.
Good stuff happening, Central Ohio. Dorsey Hager joining us on our live line. Dorsey heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You mentioned building futures. I know you want to do an update on that. We'll do that on the other side of the break. Also later in the show, Fred Redman, number two man in the AFL-CIO. Yes, it's our first Friday with Fred, and he'll be joining us later in the show.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we are available on at least six platforms and growing, just to name a few: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And remember, when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. Let's go back to our live line. Joining us from Columbus Central, Ohio, is Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, Build Central OH. And boy, that's the appropriate Twitter handle, because there's a lot of building going on in the Columbus area. We just were talking about the Intel plant. I want to talk about building futures, because in order to build a plant like the Intel plant, you're going to need a whole lot of people. So maybe you can give us an update on that program. And I understand they're talking about expanding it. What's the story, Dorsey?
Yeah, so we've had some great conversations with our funder. Of course, you know, Building Futures, a partnership between the Columbus Building Trades and the Columbus Urban League, sponsored by the NAACP and our good friend President Nana Watson. And it's the funding is comes from Franklin County. You know, our Board of Commissioners, Erica Crowley, John O'Grady, Kevin Boyce, and, you know, the Executive County Administrator, Ken Wilson there, do a great job. And Ken loves this program. I think he considers it his legacy, what we're doing and our partnership going out into the community, helping serve, the economically disadvantaged people that have been left behind, specific with the intention and being deliberate to help people of color and females get on this path to the middle class and get into these, you know, labor unions and get into these apprenticeships. But with Driving Futures and Building Futures, right now we're right around probably about 100 kids a year. I've had conversations with Kelly, had conversations with Kitty French at the state level, and Mike Knisley is almost every day calling me, talking about, you know, private entities that are looking to want to invest because they want to make sure that we have the workforce available to suit their needs. But we're looking at possibly expanding the program next year. We're not sure what the numbers are. With that expansion will obviously come increased funding, which Ken Wilson in the county, like I said, he loves this program. He's all on board. We're also flirting with the idea of maybe having some private partnerships, which I know that other pre-apprenticeship programs and apprenticeship readiness programs across the country do as well. Columbus City Council, under the leadership of Council President Shan Hardin, and then, you know, Council Member Rob Dorrance, who's an IBEW member, huge supporters of the program. They made a contribution to the program to help us upgrade some training space that we use and stuff like that, and also help with some technology enhancements and things like that. So I think everybody sees the benefits of this program, how we're helping people get out of poverty and get into the middle class, but we're also helping the area demand by getting a skilled and qualified workforce ready to do a lot of this work. Chip Holcomb from One Columbus has talked to me at length about it, and I know that when they meet with companies from around the country or around the world that come in, you know, the two questions that those companies ask is, do you have the people to build it? Do they reflect the population and the people in which we're going to build it in? And that means obviously diversity, and Chip takes a lot of our information, and he's even had Kelly seems like she's always presenting to different companies and doing programs and stuff and letting them know about this, what we're doing, and some of our numbers and some of the things that we're working on. So it's all really, really good. It's all really good. It's good stuff. But the program's definitely going to have to be ramped up. I mean, everybody needs people. We have a cohort going on right now. It's our first female cohort. I know Kelly talked about, and we've had, you know, the glazer, the finisher, the iron worker, the electrician, the insulator, just basically tell Kelly, listen, I know every kid doesn't want to be an insulator, but we'll take every kid if they want to come. You know, So we're definitely going to have to ramp this thing up and help our apprenticeship programs and help our contractors and help our local unions supply their needs, because, you know, like we talked about in the first segment, Intel, and that's the rave, and that's great, and it's a game changer, it's huge, but, you know, there's Facebook, and there's Amazon, and there's Google, three Google plants, and then, you know, all the solar work that's coming. It seems like every other week I'm going somewhere and giving a presentation on solar, and there's, you know, 2,000 acre solar farm here, 4,000 acre solar farm there, so creates a lot of opportunities for young people who want to get into some of this work, to be able to walk right out of high school, come in, get some training, step into an apprenticeship program, and then 3, 4, 5 years from now, when their friends are graduating from college with $100,000 to $300,000 worth of debt, they're graduating from an apprenticeship program with zero debt and making six figures.
Yeah, Dorsey, there's a lot of success stories out there from young people that decided to take that career path. And like you pointed out, making six figures, that's got my attention, no doubt. All right, let's switch over to politics. And this redistricting battle is still going on. And I'm sure you're in the middle of it in Central Ohio, since that's the state capital. What's your take on what's happening here, Dorsey?
Crazy. I mean, you know... reminded of an old Chris Rock stand-up, and he was talking about how, you know, some people do this and some people do that. And they're like, oh, it's the pairing thing. It's the environment they were brought up in. It was this. And he said, whatever happened is just crazy. You know, crazy covers a lot. Whatever happened. And I think that's where we're at with the redistricting. You know, what's the strategy behind it? Why are they trying to run out the clock? We're on our fourth map now. We're obviously going to miss the primary date, and the primary is going to have to be moved. You have candidates all over the state, Republicans, Democrats, independents, liberals, and conservatives. Don't know what district they're running in. Don't know if their signatures are valid. Don't know when they should start hiring campaign staff, doing outreach, going and screening for endorsements. So that we're in the same boat. We've pushed our screening back on state House and state Senate. We are going to screen judicial and countywide. Really excited to talk to Eric Crowley, our newest county commissioner, Michael Stenziano, our county auditor, who's a big advocate for organized labor, was obviously hugely instrumental in Rob Dorn's appointment to city council. So looking forward to screening and talking to him about all the great things he's done at his office and then the judicial candidates. A friend of mine, a friend of organized labor, Bill Spirlaza, leaving the city attorney's office, running for judge. Mike Holbrook, Colleen O'Donnell, two friends of labor, are up for re-election. The appeals court, which is huge here, 10th District Court of Appeals here in Central Ohio. I mean, I don't know where our committee is going to fall, but there's four very, very, very good, very intelligent candidates. One is up for re-election, Julia Dorian, who's done tremendous work, 10th District Court of Appeals. Carly Edelstein is looking to run to get on the 10th District Court of Appeals, very bright young attorney who will do an incredible job. And then two friends of ours from the State House are leaving the State House to run for 10th District Court of Appeals, David Leland and Kristen Boggs. And, you know, my friendship with Kristen Boggs has no boundaries. I've known her since the first day she came to me and said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to run for the State House. What are your thoughts on that? What are your concerns? How can I advocate for organized labor? And our friendship has been tremendous. But it's going to be an interesting day when we screen on April 21st. I know the committee will take all the information, all the interviews, all the screening stuff, and make our recommendations to the board. And hopefully this year we'll get to screen for State House and State Senate. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the courts. We'll see what happens with the Supreme Court. There's that crazy push from a few people that they want to impeach Justice O'Connor now. I mean, I guess that's where we're at now in politics. If somebody disagrees with you or if they don't do what you want them to do, you try to oust them, I guess. So, but like I said, back to the theme of the day, crazy, just crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And these are people from our own party. It's so sad. It's so sad. This, we shouldn't even be talking about this right now. They should have done their job. I mean, these are voter referendums from years ago that needed to be addressed, and they're just not being addressed. All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Dorsey Hager, who heads the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can find more at columbusconstruction.org. Lots going on down there. I'm sure we'll get more to talk about next month and the month after that and the month after that. So you take care, stay safe, and we'll talk to you in May, believe it or not, okay?
You too, and I hope in May we're no longer talking about snow. So
okay,
we're talking,
buddy,
about NBA playoffs and baseball. So great talking to you, Flash. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
You got it. Take care. All right, quick break. Fred Redmond, number two man in the AFL-CIO. It's our first Friday with Fred, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWaterson.com.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment, good employment, I might add. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Washington, D.C. right now. And joining us on line number two is Fred Redmond. That's right. It's April 1st. It's our first Friday with Fred. Fred officially retired as of yesterday from the steelworkers. He was a steelworker since 1973, but I always say once a steelworker, always a steelworker. And today being the 1st of April, you are officially now into your next job as Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Fred, you never give up, do you?
Well, I still got a little gas left in the tank, Flash, and there's a lot of work to be done, and this has been a very nostalgic week for me. You know, I feel very good about my career with the steelworkers. As you said, once a steelworker, always a steelworker. So it's been a good run, but I'm very excited about working with Liz Shuler and just being Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. And we have some exciting and challenging times ahead. So thank you very much. But to all my steelworkers friends, you know, this isn't goodbye. This is just so long. You know, I'll see you on the front lines because I'm going to remain in the fight, Flash.
I hear you, brother. Well, let's talk about what's going to happen here next week, or it might be the week after, and we're talking about the confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Fred, I don't know about you, but that was a real circus show when the staunch right wingers. What was the one question? How do you define a woman? I mean, come on, yeah, where were they going with all this, Fred?
Well, you know, I think they were, you know, trying to. And see, this is what happened when you find a person with a perfect record, a person that has judicial temperament, a person that's eminently qualified, then people resort to, you know, all sort of tactics that, you know, at one point during the confirmation hearings, you know, it almost became laughable. I mean, the question about how do you define woman was obviously an attempt to, you know, set her up for some sort of transgender case that's probably coming before the court. But I was so proud to see Judge Brown, you know, in action. She showed to the world, you know, during the confirmation hearings, why President Biden appointed her. This lady is eminently qualified. She has the temperament. She has the knowledge. She has the experience. She has the record. And she's going to serve us all well on the Supreme Court. But the hearings last week was just almost to the point they would be laughable if it wasn't so sad to see the antics of the Republican Party and, you know, how they just made a mockery out of the entire hearings.
Very sad. Yeah, talk about great qualities. I mean, all the boxes are checked with her, no doubt. Right. You feel pretty good. I know Biden wants to get, the White House wants to get bipartisan support. The good news, Susan Collins out of Maine announced this week she's going to vote for her. You think she'll get a couple of other Republicans to go
yeah,
that way?
Yeah, I think she'll get a couple of others. I think Murkowski will probably come around. And I think there'll be a couple of others. We could possibly get Mitt Romney. But, you know, look, I mean, the only reason why, and I think she proved throughout the hearings, that the only reason somebody would have to vote against this lady, it won't be on the basis of qualifications. It will definitely be on a political partisan basis. But I think that she'll have some bipartisan support. But, you know, look, this is, you know, diversity is about perspectives, and this is a perspective that's been missing off of the court since its inception, you know, the view of one of the largest voting bloc in the United States, and that's black women. And, you know, she brings a very pragmatic and unique view to the court, and she'll do well. She'll do well, but I think there will be some more bipartisan support. I'm sorry, but look, I'm not naive to think there's going to be a lot, but I think that there are some people who, on the Republican side of the aisle, who cannot rationalize why they should vote against her.
I want to drive people to the AFL-CIO website. Go to AFLCIO.org, and you could join the chorus of people supporting Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. And there's a lot of people doing that. It's important that you lobby your senators on this, because this is going to be a vote that's going to be right in the Senate. So go to AFLCIO.org. Fred, you probably know this. Today is the first anniversary of the strike by coal miners at Warrior Met in Alabama. And I read a statement from Cecil Roberts at the top of the show. This is ridiculous, and this is just another example of how Wall Street has hollowed out the middle class in America. This should not be going on. And Cecil pointed out, you know, coal right now is at an all-time high. It's ridiculous.
Right.
And they're not producing the coal, because they don't have the right people there. They're not skilled like the miners. I'd like to get your perspective, because, you know, coming from the steelworkers union, steelworkers do a lot of mining themselves. So this has got to kind of touch you personally, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, you know, this strike at Warrior Met, that, as you stated, lasted, you know, the day of the first year, is the one-year anniversary of this strike. And this is a classic example of corporate greed at its worst. I mean, these miners, Flash, they literally saved this company and brought this company out of bankruptcy. And now the company is, you know, they have shown high levels of profitability. You know, Cecil Roberts said, coal is at an all-time high. Yet they refuse to just merely return. And I want your audience to understand this. These mine workers are not asking for more than what they gave up in order to save the company. I mean, they rolled back wages, you know, they froze their pension plans, they took a hit on health care benefits in order to allow this company to come out of bankruptcy. And their proposal is to restore those benefits that they gave up. So, you know, this is a classic example of corporations at its worst. I will be in Birmingham next week on Wednesday. We're having a huge rally recognizing the one-year anniversary of the strike. And, hopefully, there will be some. I know there's been a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, but hopefully these folks will come to their senses. I mean, this is what happens when, you know, corporations go into bankruptcy. You got these private equity hedge fund people who, you know, buy these companies out of bankruptcy, and their only purpose is to make a profit and then spend the company off.
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, Warrior Met is a classic example of what's wrong with the financial systems in the United States and what's wrong with corporations. And, you know, so we're going to be there next Wednesday. And, you know, we hope that this strike could come to a successful conclusion in the very, very near future, and those miners could deservingly go back to work.
That rally next Wednesday, they're calling it a caravan to victory. They're bringing in miners from all across the country. One day longer, one day stronger. It's the Warrior Met Warriors. If you go to the mine workers homepage, everything's posted there, umwa.org. Yes, Cecil is a fighter. That guy's a Vietnam vet, man. He ain't giving up. He's a fighter from day one. And you mentioned what they gave. You know what they gave up? $1.1 billion. That's how much the miners gave up, $1.1 billion. And they've probably lost 10 times that already because they're so greedy. They don't want to settle with them. It's just ridiculous.
No, it is ridiculous. And you know, like I said, it's one of those things, crash the show. Everything was wrong with our financial structure in the United States. I mean, these corporations go into bankruptcy. The workers are considered unsecured creditors. And we have no leverage in a bankruptcy court. So what these miners did, first of all, they should not hold their heads down at all. They were courageous. They fought not to save their own jobs, but also to save the community. And they gave up, you know, the that amount of money and wages and benefits in order to keep this company sustainable. And, you know, for what this company is doing to these miners and to the community is unconscionable. It's unconscionable, but it shows the greed of Wall Street, and it shows the disconnect between corporations and the workers who, you know, make profits for them every day. And the only thing they're asking is to restore our benefits. You have our wages and our benefits now that you're in a profitable status and can afford to do so, and to share some in the wealth that they've helped to create. So it's a situation that, you know, a lot of people are looking at, shaking their heads at. But, you know, we have to change the system, Flash. We have to, you know, change the bankruptcy laws in this country. So we have a lot of work to do because we can't afford to have any more warrior Mets in this country.
It's funny you mentioned the bankruptcy laws in this country, because I just heard a story, I believe it was on NPR this week, where companies, Johnson & Johnson, a very profitable company, they had a lawsuit with this talcum powder that's got asbestos in it. So you know what they did? They created another company, and they put all the claims in that other company. It was like a subsidiary, and then that company declared bankruptcy, so they don't have to pay out the victims. There's something wrong with bankruptcy laws in this country when they can do that. I mean, this is a very profitable company.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those sort of things like Johnson & Johnson did, you know, setting up a shell subsidiary in order to shift their funds. I mean, you know, these are the things that, you know, you have union-busting law firms around this country. These are the things that they profit on.
Is
educating these corporations on how to beat the system, how to screw the workers. So we definitely have to put some focus on bankruptcy laws in this country, because they're just destroying the very fabric of manufacturing. And, I mean, you know, look, most workers, when a company has some legitimate problems, most workers and all unions, you know, the first response is, what can we do to help, okay, to keep this company profitable? And, you know, but it's not about screwing the employer. You know, they have a legitimate reason where they're having some financial difficulties. But it's always about screwing the workers from the employer's perspective. So, you know, we have to really, really take a look. We've had numerous discussions with members in the legislature, in the Congress and the Senate. People recognize that the laws is tilted against workers when it comes to bankruptcies, come to bankruptcy courts. But we have to have the will as a country to protect workers in these situations, because they are the ones who lose out the most, along with our communities where these companies operate.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Fred, it's always a pleasure having your perspective on the show. Fred Redmond, Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. And again, go to that homepage, aflcio.org, to support Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. You take care, stay safe, keep up the fight. We'll do this next month, okay?
Absolutely. Take care, Flash. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we're going to the southeast part of the country, the North Carolina Labor Council and the Florida Federation of Labor. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.